You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the time pilot?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan.
We are back. It's true. Chris and I have been watching the same show for the last decade plus. We just see it through different lenses. And that's what's so beautiful, right? Our experiences are so different.
And honestly, I want everyone at home because I've gotten many notes on shortcomings mm-hmm. that I mean and too aggressive and don't allow other people to have their opinions. So I'm telling everyone now, keep it to yourselves. If you like Logan, that's okay. I want Logan for all of you. Like, that's the thing about being Team Jess. You can really sit in your truth and happiness. Like, you're not Team Jess. We're not over here trying to convince mm-hmm. everyone to come to our side. I feel there's a desperation from Team Logans and Deans of like, see how right we are. It's like, guys,
I don't need anyone to agree with me. I just wish people would stop bashing Logan. Right? That's all I want. Like, we don't have to tear him down to build Jess up.
But see, that's the thing. That's the only way for people to, like, prove their point with Logan. They're always like, well, Jess did this. It's like, yeah, because you have no points of your own.
Okay. Agree to disagree. We're gonna, we have to move on. We're moving on. We've got some questions. This first question comes from friend of the show, Becky Abrams. Let's see what Becky had to say.
Hi, it's me, your very good friend, Becky Abrams. And these are the questions that I have for the beautiful hosts about Gilmore Girls. Number one, it's a multi-part question. What do you think each of Rory's boyfriends brought out in her? And was any of it good? And like, what would you imagine a better boyfriend could have brought out in her? Like, she has some redeeming qualities, or at least used to before everything went crazy. And I'm just wondering, like, what we're thinking about how Rory is affected by the men in her life. And that's a very open-ended question. So more specifically, what's Rory's dream boyfriend that you would invent? Now, to ask another question that sort of broadens this and doesn't just have to do with boys, who do you think in the show, like worldwide in the show, brought out things about Rory that were kind of surprising? You know what I mean? Like, do you feel like Miss Patty ever brought out Rory's, like, Broadway side? Do you feel like Taylor brought out Rory's naturally sour side? I don't know. You let me know. And thanks so much for fielding my questions, and I hope you have a wonderful show.
So I had to play this. I know we're trying to get away from the boys, but to your point earlier, they always want to pretend like the show is more than the boys.
Let's get into it. Let's get right back into it.
Like, the amount of people that want to talk about the boys, like, these are the questions like people question. Want to talk about. Yeah.
So I would say in terms of it was quite a long question. So let's see if I can remember it all.
Yeah.
And as we go through, we'll chat about it.
Yeah.
What did each boyfriend bring out of Rory? I think with Dean, he brought her into a sense of fun. Like, Rory was so stoic and only interested in school. And I think he taps into the part of, I think, Rory that is more like Lorelai when they start, like, when you notice in the original part of the show, Lorelai's always talking and Rory's very the straight man. But then she takes the Lorelai position when with Dean in terms of making jokes and opening up. With Jess, I think he opens up her more critical mind and questioning. Well, Stars Hollow doesn't have to be all you see. I think it's very important that the first time we see Rory outside of the kind of world that the show is contained to is with Jess when she goes to New York.
Yeah.
Then with Logan, for all of my hatred of him, I'll say he does open her up to sexuality.
To sexuality, and I would also say to, like, Logan gives her permission to enjoy things that I think Lorelai made her think she wasn't supposed to like or couldn't like. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I think, like,
tiaras and penthouses with suits of armor.
Because, I mean, like, good, bad, or otherwise, like, you know, it is a world that she had access to, right? I do think that, like, whether it's a good world to be a part of or not, she actually explored things with her grandparents in a different way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and I would say that there's a world in which, right, if you consider Logan and Tristan as kind of analogous to each other.
Yes.
That Tristan was never going to be an option for Rory while living with Lorelai.
Exactly.
So the ability to choose someone who, of a higher social caste, whatever, if and more money and privilege, comes with an unburdened Rory not having to worry about how Lorelai would feel about it. Now, I think the second part of the question was about, like, who we would like to see her with. And then I just want to, let's just dream cast. Who do we think would be a good part? Like, what actor would we drop into Stars Hollow to date Rory? I mean, obviously, she went with Vincent Kartheiser, and I don't want to see him in
Stars Hollow. No, thank you. I don't need that in my Stars Hollow. I feel like, to be honest, something they never did. They did this with Paris and not Rory, which was kind of fun. But I always imagined Rory being with someone a little bit older.
Well, the hot I do not claim season 7, but I do love the hot professor in season 7. Who she has kind of a crush on.
And we never really went there. And so I'm thinking if I were going to, like,
Michael Keaton.
Wow.
I'm kidding. That's just my personal crush. And Rory doesn't need to have everything I want.
I don't need that for her, but now I can't stop thinking about it.
John Slattery?
That's maybe we're going a little too far away. You know, but that's the vibe, something like that. Probably somebody that dated Carrie on Sex and the City, to be honest.
Yeah. Love to see her with, like, Aiden just roll through.
John Corbett. Oh, my God. That would be such a weird dinner the first time Lorelai met whatever character John Corbett was playing.
So, Rory, let's see. She's about, she's probably, what, 30? How long has it been since she's in her, like, 37 now?
Yeah, she's probably around my age, which is, like, 35, so, like, somewhere around there.
So who would be, like, who's an actor of that age who would be, like, a fun person for her to hang out with? I'm struggling to even think of an actor of that age.
I know. I'm trying to think. But
you want someone with a kind of fun, intellectual energy?
Yes.
For some reason, I'm landing on Laura Dern.
You know what? I've been often of the side that we should have seen Rory with a woman, so I'm here for it.
Or honestly, let's just have Rory and Paris be together.
I mean, somebody DM'd us our account today, and they got me excited about the idea of Lane and Paris in a way that I had never been excited about anything before.
Well, you know who I ship is Lane and Jess, actually. Not Lane and Jess, Paris and Jess.
Oh, interesting.
From that one episode where they are eating the food and kind of debating. There's something about talking with someone who could push Jess.
Oh, I would be very into a Paris and Jess situation.
Did you see Rory with a Tom Hiddleston?
That would be hilarious, actually. Like, why not? Yeah, like, let's let Rory go through every man Taylor Swift ever dated.
Yeah, I'd love to see her just roll through. I mean, she could not write a song as good as All Too Well, but let's see her try. Love to see Rory shift into a singer-songwriter mold.
All right, so let's see Rory take Taylor Swift's recyclables and see what she does.
Absolutely.
With them. All right, we got a couple more questions coming at us. These are friend of the show, Kevin Hines, had some questions in addition to his thoughts about her OTP. Here are Kevin's questions.
Will they just be about Rory's dating life?
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Chris. This is Kevin Hines. I wanted to ask you guys a couple questions. First off, I want you to name the top three most essential supporting cast members of Gilmore Girls. So when I say essential, I don't mean favorite cast members or funniest cast members, but the ones that you think are the most important to Gilmore Girls feeling like Gilmore Girls. So when I say supporting cast, I'm going to eliminate, obviously, the Gilmore Girls and any of their significant love interests. So no Luke, no Jess, no Dean, no Logan, no Richard Gilmore. I'm also eliminating Paris and Suki from consideration, just to be arbitrary. So the top three most essential supporting cast members outside that category. I know who I think it is, but I'm curious what you guys think. My second question is, name the top three worst things Lorelai did. Now, Rory does lots of things I don't like, particularly in the Yale years. But Lorelai picks and chooses her moments to be terrible, and they're big. So I'm curious what you would say the top three things that Lorelai did that are awful. Thank you for doing a podcast about a great show like the Gilmore Girls. Bye.
Well, I just want to say I love his voice.
He's got a great voice. Great voice. All right. So those are two huge questions.
I mean, he knocked out. I was like, well, I was ready to go. I was like, obviously the top three supporting players are. Then he knocked them all out.
So do you have a top three?
I mean, obviously, I think in terms of, right, the vibe of Gilmore Girls, the town is so important. So ascribing to that, I think you got to have Kirk.
Mm, okay.
Kirk is, I think, the most
quintessential
representative of what Stars Hollow is and its wackiness.
Okay.
And then I would say if the other part of what makes Gilmore Girls what it is the familial relationship of the Gilmores, but we're knocking out Richard and Emily, then I got to go with Gran.
Mm.
Short run, iconic, great stuff. Then if you go Rory's educational life, which is this, then I'm going to hit you with a combined character, because I don't think they work. They're the, you know, fucking Guildenstern and whatever the fuck that is, Madeline and Louise.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fascinating.
So that's how I would kind of divvy it up, as the three elements of Gilmore Girls: Stars Hollow, familial life, Rory's education.
Okay. So to me, I have a similar breakdown. I think Stars Hollow, like, is such a huge part of the world. My favorite, I would say, is probably, I would go with the better Patty, but I think most important is actually Taylor for what he, because there's so many storylines that, like.
Oh, I love Taylor.
Yeah, he creates so much conflict. So, like, I want to say Babette or Miss Patty, but I'm going to say Taylor's most important.
And I should add that I'm knocking out Michelle because he's in the opening credits.
Yes, I agree. I also told myself Michelle was off limits.
So I thought of Michelle, but I'm not including him because he's in the opening credits. And I feel like he has the same weight as Suki.
Yes, I agree. Agree for the same reasons. So Taylor's my representative of Stars Hollow. For the family, I'm going to say, and this is not like one character, but it also kind of is. No, I'm going to say the maid, whoever is currently working in the Gilmore house.
That is who, right? We are so in sync on this. We may not be on that human trash dump Logan. However, because I was like, well, I want to pick the maid, but that's not a character. And there's not one maid I could point to other than, I guess, Berta.
But there's like there's always a maid.
But the concept of the maid.
The concept of the maid and what it tells us about that world, and particularly about Emily, is just so important. And then, to me, I guess the third environment would be some, like, the Kims are so important to me, but I don't think that they ever got the respect they deserved fully on the show. So, like, could the show exist without them? Yes. Do I want it to exist without them? No. Somebody slid into our DMs pitching that the real reboot everybody should be begging for is a Gilmore Girls focused on Lane and being a mom and getting to see like Gilmore Girls again, but it's all really this time focused on them. And I'm obsessed with that idea.
So you would choose Mrs. Kim?
I think so.
That's great. Can I point out two Mrs. Kim moments? Because I'm now in like a rewatch. I love the fact that in the episode where Lane gets engaged, mm-hmm. The episode after, right? Zach comes in and proposes at Luke's diner. The next mm-hmm. episode, Dave has to, Jesus Christ, I really want it to be Dave.
Zach, you really want it to be Dave.
He has to convince Mrs. Kim to allow him mm-hmm. to propose. So he has to write that song. And so Lane's actual engagement in front of her mother, there's the moment where he proposes, Mrs. Kim actually pulls out a ring and is the one who puts it on Lane's finger instead of Zach. And I think, yep. like, talk about just so representative of this show about mothers.
Yes.
And daughters. And then I do not like a lot about season 7. And I think the episode is actually really bad. But the essential idea where Lane asks Rory, will you be my Lorelai Gilmore? I think is so sweet. Like, I understand that I might have a crazy relationship with my mom, and your mom was so important to helping me navigate that. I need you to be that for my kids. I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah, there's so, in rewatches especially, there's so much in the Lane and her mother story that, like, just brings so much more like depth to other storylines when you get to see them juxtaposed.
And if you want a boost of serotonin, watch Mrs. Kim when in the end of season 5, when she's forcing Lane to go on the road.
Oh my God. And also another moment that I'd forgotten is when Zach and Mrs. Kim bond over how they both think Lane looks better with her glasses. And then they start looking at the childhood photos is such an adorable moment. I love it. It's so cute.
Mrs. Kim is a great choice.
I love Mrs. Kim. So Mrs. Kim, the maid, and Taylor for me.
So one of yours is just a simple concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, 3 times that you think Lorelai was awful. I mean, we got some choices.
Okay. As much as I dislike Max Medina, I don't think it's great to just leave in the middle of the night and not inform your fiance that you're not getting married. Like, that's not great.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think that she is routinely really rude to to Emily when it's unnecessary. So when Emily and Lorelai go to the spa.
Yeah.
I think she's just unnecessarily rude to Emily. It's like Emily's actually really trying to connect with you, and it takes Lorelai so long to recognize it, and it's really frustrating to watch. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the third would be, well, I liked when she was mean to Logan. That was really fun. I don't know. Has she ever done anything? I don't blame her for sleeping with Christopher. So
no,
I think for her that was a breakup. God, can I not think of you know, she shoos people away at one point out of the gazebo just so she can stand there, and it's really rude.
That is really rude. I will also say, I understand her disappointment, but I don't like how her initial reaction to finding out Rory slept with Dean. Like, I get it, your daughter lost her virginity to a married man, but it's, I don't know, it feels weird to me.
But I also think you have to think that she's supposed to also be helping her mother.
True.
She's supposed to be at the inn, like, doing, like, it's not like she just came home and Rory had been at home.
It's not like the initial moment. It's like, it takes her a second. She gets there, but, like, I don't know.
But then I think if Rory hadn't doubled down and been so like, yeah, there's nothing. I think what makes it's the problem there is she's initially shocked and like, wait, you're sleeping with a married guy. But then it's more Rory's, like, complete moral ambivalence about it, which is, I think, genuinely shocking to Lorelai.
Yeah.
And I will also say that, and I hate this, Rory, I don't know if it's the writing or Rory, she makes a false analogy. She says, well, you slept with Dad when he was with Sherry. And the truth of the matter is that Christopher and Sherry weren't together when they slept together at Suki's wedding. He goes back to Sherry after that. So Rory is trash in that scene.
I think Rory's trash in the scene, and I think Rory's wrong. There just always felt like there was, like, Lorelai leapt to judgment instead of concern, which always felt weird to me.
She definitely came in hot, but I will say, in terms of her judgment, remember, there's that really odd, but I think true moment of motherhood when she hears that Paris has lost her virginity and says, I have the good kid.
Yes.
And I think that, yes, we want Lorelai to be this cool mom, But she is still a mom who really does kind of signal and view her daughter's virginity as a kind of thing that needs to be protected. She's not as evolved as I think we would want her to be, or even she thinks of herself as.
I don't think she's that evolved at all. I think she's in an arrested state of development. And I think that comes through a lot in her discomfort in Rory's like love life. And I get it. It's awkward and she tries, but there's just like these weird undertones throughout.
What do you think about the moment when Lorelai walks in on Rory and Logan about to have sex at the wedding? And she's like, my God, Rory, it's your grandparents' wedding. Now I'm with her.
Okay. I'm with her. And like, this is a perfect example though, of like, I feel like the way she handles that situation, I'm on her side more because she's like, rolling her eyes and like calling it out. But also her first inclination beyond that is like, now I'm going to get you safely out of here and I'm going to de-escalate. I'm going to like, I don't know, like that to me feels in line with her character and truthful to the character. And I'm on board for it. And I like that to me rings better.
I agree with you that I love when Lorelai is like, puts away the fun mom, I'm your best friend, and becomes like a more traditional parent.
Totally, which she's not very good at.
It's like that side of her is in there.
Yeah. I guess there are moments where she's just being Emily too, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess that's maybe, I'm just recognizing that her reaction to Dean is kind of an Emily reaction. And that's
absolutely
who she learned it from. Yeah.
And same when she has her original thought process on Jess is very like, stay away from this guy because I said so.
Yep.
And it's not until Emily says, oh, you're right, that she's like, wait, I don't want to be like this.
I have questions about how Lorelai treats Michelle. I know he's kind of a jerk sometimes, but I don't always love their relationship. And I think she could have been a better friend.
Yes, absolutely. I think she's a terrible boss. When she's hungover after Rain's wedding and is screaming at the guy because he's trying to cook, it's like, well, why don't you take this conversation out of the kitchen?
Yeah, 100%. That drives me crazy.
One of my favorite parts of the revival, though, is that by the absence of Suki, they bump up they elevate
relationship.
Michelle, and their friendship in the revival is so sweet. And one of my favorite scenes is when they go to the speakeasy and she's so clearly affected about the idea that he's going to leave.
Yeah.
And I think not to bring it to Unjust like that, that was to me the clear model I really wanted of like seeing Stanford and Carrie. Now, obviously, Willie Garson tragically passed away.
Yeah.
But I was hoping that it was like, okay, Samantha's gone.
Yeah.
We're now going to see more Stanford and have him elevated in this space in the way Michelle was.
And I think you're right. It's having seen that in A Year in the Life, when I rewatch the earlier seasons, that makes me sad for some of the episodes where she's not nice to him. Because it's like, we missed out on some stuff.
Well, they just had to tell a difference. She had another buddy.
She had another buddy. And it works sometimes. It's playful. But I was like, it feels
a little bit. No, sometimes she is just downright rude.
It's just mean. It's just mean in a way that's like, why do we have to just be straight up mean? All right, we have a few more voice memos that I just want to share. This one I have to share because it comes from a person with the name of a character. This one comes from a woman named Paris McCarthy, friend of the show. Let's see what Paris has to say.
Okay, so here's my question for you. Do you think they did Luke dirty when they all of a sudden made him not interested in marrying Lorelai when April showed up? Because it just didn't make any sense. Like, Luke gets a daughter, and instead of going to the one person who's the most best with daughters, yes, I said most best, he just ghosts her, becomes really weird, starts not telling the truth. I mean, it just seemed like really out of character.
Did they do Luke dirty? Did they jump the shark when they introduced April?
I think originally watching it, I absolutely would have said it feels like Luke has been like Invasion of the Body Snatched.
Okay.
However, upon many rewatches, to me, it feels completely in line with this kind of man who's incapable of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Luke is one of the, in this show that is like really about women, and it should be, Luke is, I think, a great example of a complicated good man.
Yeah.
Where he has trouble expressing his feelings. He doesn't go to therapy, but he's willing to read self-help books to get him to be able to ask. And then he is someone who, to me, comes off completely as a person who lives in their head. And that's his attraction to Lorelai, someone who keeps nothing in her head and says, and is very verbal. So it tracks to me that he would get this really earth-shattering bit of news.
Yeah.
And it would take him time to process not only how to adjust and think about how to integrate April into his life, but also, I've been a father, I've been a bad father, but I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, it suffers a bit because the show isn't about Luke, so there's never a scene in which he talks through his feelings. Mm-hmm. So we more get to see him as the agent of, like, what Lorelai can't have.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it from his perspective, trying to mitigate and discover, like, becoming a father to a 13-year-old girl at his age is a little bit more important than getting married.
It
is.
No,
it's just we want the wedding.
Yeah. I think it hurts to watch because you've been rooting for them, but I think it makes perfect sense. I'm with you. Awesome. All right. The next question comes to us from friend of the show, Sarah Chase.
I hope it's not about Rory's love life.
Hello, fellow Gilmore Girls stans. I have many questions for you guys. Just off the top of my head, my first one for you stans is, as a Connecticutian, where do you think Stars Hollow is? Obviously, Amy Sherman-Palladino said it was fashioned after Washington Depot, Connecticut, which is in the northwest corner of Connecticut. But it has to be 20 minutes from Hartford, 20 minutes from Yale. So you do the math. My second question is, why wasn't Luke at Suki's wedding? The whole town was there, even Kirk. But Luke wasn't? I'm done.
All right. Two important questions.
Well, I think we know where Stars Hollow is. It's on the back lot.
Yeah. It's a fictitious... This is an alternate universe. It can't possibly be the world we know.
Yeah, it's like, that's where it is.
Yeah.
I always was waiting for them to crane up and just, like, see the Hollywood sign. It's like, absolutely, we're not getting... Mm-mm. Not getting any kind of sense of reality, time, or space.
No.
And then I think there is enough language in the show that justifies Luke doesn't go to big town things.
It does. This is the...
And he has no one to drag him. It's not like he and Suki are very close. And this is, like, a big problem, I think, in the show in general.
Yeah.
You never get a sense of, like, there's a sense that everyone knows everyone.
Yeah.
But not a sense of when everyone arrived in Stars Hollow. Luke grew up there, but did Suki? Mm-hmm. So how long have they known each other? We know Suki left.
Yeah.
Miss Patty both seems like she's from there, but also we know she had this long career that took her away.
Right.
But she is aware of, like, everyone's like, oh yeah, I knew your dad, honey. It's like, you can't really figure it out. And it almost seems like Luke, in terms of living there the longest, would be more connected to someone like Patty or Babette. And he is often at things that are important to them.
Yeah.
Like, he goes to Babette's cat's funeral, but he's not close to Suki until he starts dating Lorelai. So he's at Suki's second wedding, I promise.
It is interesting, though, when you bring that up, because it does beg questions, like, for as long as Lorelai and Luke have known each other, it's fascinating, like, when she finds out about his dark day, that she had never noticed it before, but the rest of the town does. Or, like, you know, the fact that he, like, April is 13, I think, when she gets introduced, and the fact that Lorelai was unaware that he had been dating someone, but she would have already been in that town, and yet she had no reference point for that. Like, there's so many things.
Right, so there's a huge, it doesn't make any, right, she moves there when Rory is, I think, one.
One, yeah.
And if April's 13, then, and by that point, I believe in the show, Rory is 21, because we see her 21st birthday.
So he should have been dating her.
And it's weird. But she also didn't know Rachel.
Right, which is also weird.
So it also presumes that, like, well, when did you start going to Luke's? But then I think in that episode when they go on their first date, she says, like, oh, from 8 years ago. And it's like, so wait, you've only been going to... Maybe Luke's didn't exist, but we also don't know when Luke's dad died.
That's true. We don't know when Luke's dad died.
So it's like, it's very amorphous. And
yeah.
I don't think Amy Sherman-Palladino will ever sit down and write, like, a show Bible for us all to read, but I would love to get at it.
I would devour it, because I do have a lot of questions. It does feel, it is interesting. I would like a total headcount of exactly how many people were at Suki's wedding, though.
everyone except Luke.
Right? Was it just Luke? Like,
I mean, Richard and Emily were there. Everybody was on the call sheet that day.
Like, that's what starts to feel weird to me.
Jess popped in.
Like, that starts to feel insane to me, you know? Like,
one of my favorite episodes, though. I can't get started.
Yeah. This is less of a question and more of just a hot take from a friend of the show, Erin Fenton. She's coming in hot with this one.
Hello, we stan. I'm writing in with a spicy alternate universe take. Okay. So there were a couple of instances in the series where Rory said some kind of weird stuff about Luke. I'm thinking specifically, I don't know, I've always thought about maybe the line delivery when they're having that conversation about, like, Lorelai has a dream about Luke and Rory's like, was he naked? And that kind of led me to theorize that maybe she might have had a little bit of a crush on Luke. And, you know, sometimes you're a teenager, you have crushes on adults, it's fine. But, like, alternate universe, maybe Luke and Lorelai never get together. And, in fact, maybe there is some good vibes between Luke and Rory. Is this too spicy? I don't know. You tell me.
So is it too spicy, the possibility that...
Is Gilmore Girls multiverse?
I don't know. What do you think? Is it possible that there is a world where instead of Lorelai, Luke ends up with Rory? What do you think?
I want to say no.
Okay.
But, you know, if I play it out in my head, I'm still going to land on no. But it just doesn't track. Although I will say, it's like, looking around Stars Hollow, there's not a lot to feast your eyes on, so maybe Rory would have a crush on Luke.
I mean, maybe. It could happen. I believe she maybe thought he was cute. I can't imagine a world where they end up together.
No. They don't even seem like they... I don't even see them, like, palling around and talking when, like, Lorelai's not around.
Especially because Luke is just such a father figure. That scene we talked about earlier where he barges in and they find Logan.
Oh, yeah,
and
we should talk about that. He's our father. It's like, guys.
He's like your dad. He's our dad. No.
Very Game of Thrones.
Well, and also speaking about, like, timeline and not knowing things about each other, like, when he throws in Christopher's face that he was there when she had, like, ear infections and stuff as a little kid, it's like, he's known her for a long time. He watched her grow up. It's wild.
And yet they didn't start, and yet he didn't open Luke's diner until like 1 year before the show started. So why he was hanging out with them makes zero sense.
I don't understand.
Also, it's just fun to think about Lorelai as an adult bringing her child to a diner. It's like, just stay at home, lady.
Yeah, no. All right. This one comes from a new stand named Megan. And I think that I'm excited. She's got some great insight. Here we go.
First of all, I stan Gilmore Girls hard. I have watched seasons 1 through 7 every fall since the show ended in 2007. But without fail, with every watch through, the thing that really grinds my gears is the downfall of Lane's character. As an Asian Canadian teen, I was so stoked to have a character that I could relate to on a mainstream, highly popular show. When the show first started, Lane and Rory were inseparable. She was this rebellious but respectful, really cool, wonderfully energetic person. They ended up giving her a great love story arc with David, played by the one and only Adam Brody, and their chemistry was off the charts. But then, when Brody left to do the OC, it's like the Paladinos didn't know what to do with Lane. It's like they boiled Lane down to her most basic attributes. They were like, oh, she likes music and still hung out with Zach, so let's have them be in a band together, and then get married. Oh, and because she waited to have sex until after marriage, wouldn't it be so funny if they got pregnant immediately after with twins? So then what? She just gets to be a mom in Stars Hollow while her husband gets to pursue his dreams to be a musician? What the hell? They even had her and Rory have less of a presence in each other's lives. I know that's true to life, but it's not true to either character. I'm not sure if we're talking about the revival at all, but a not-so-fun fact is in the entirety of the 4 episodes of the revival, Lane's cumulative screen time across all the episodes is less than the stupidly drawn-out musical scene in episode 3. So I guess after all of that, my question is, why did the Paladinos stop caring about Lane? They seem to stop caring about her character development. They just put no effort into her. And I just am left wondering why.
Everything she said is true.
Everything's true. And it was just shocking to get to the end and then hear the question. Because I was with her. And then I was like, I forgot we were. I was like, speak, girl. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That was a beautiful thesis. I mean, it is one of the more painful evolutions of the show is what happens to Lane's character, because she does start off so empowered and cool and a part of things. Yeah.
I think for the original run of the show, I can almost forgive it because it is about Rory and Lorelai. There isn't a ton of real estate to continue to cut back to Stars Hollow and tell individual stories about our side characters.
Sure.
I will completely agree that I think it was a faulty choice, though, on behalf of Amy Sherman-Palladino, who has openly said that when Adam Brody left the show, that she felt very strongly that the story they wanted to tell was Lane falling in love with someone in the band. Mm-hmm. And she said, basically, had Zach left, it would have gone to Brian. Had Brian left, it would have gone to Gil. Like, that was the kind of story they were trying to tell. And so it got her locked into someone who I don't necessarily think that Keiko has great chemistry with.
Yeah.
And so that's a bit off, and they had to tell it in a different kind of way. But to me, it makes total sense that I think you would go to college, build this new life, and become friendly with other people. I think it makes a lot more sense to me than that Paris would become a bigger part of Rory's life out after college or during college. Now, where I will say the problem is the revival. We could have done more with Lane there. Amy Sherman-Palladino has said that she was very disappointed to find that they had gotten Lane pregnant in season 7 and that having her have children changed the direction of what she wanted to do with that character. And what I wonder is ultimately, given the reveal that Rory is pregnant at the end, I am not 100% sure that they wanted to spend a lot of time on a character who has children, thereby forcing Rory to think about kids and have us see them.
See, but I think that's where they missed the mark, though, right?
No, I think they missed the mark. I don't think it was a good choice, but I think their thinking was we don't want to have kids around a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is one of those things where, like, Amy just was so mad about the choices that were out of her hand that she just kind of, like, poor Lane suffered at the hands of Amy, knowing she couldn't, you know, you can't kill off the kids. The kids are there, but she just didn't want to deal with it.
She also, I think, has tunnel vision.
Yeah.
We were barreling towards being on that gazebo hearing, mom, I'm pregnant. And anything that stood in the way of being able to tell that story,
she wasn't as interested in.
And frankly, and you know, the nature of, I think, television and storytelling, I love Lane. I think a lot of people do. Do I love Lane more than I love Paris? Probably not. And so if you're going to try to tell, if you're going to take real estate away from the Gilmore Girls, what character did they fell in love with?
See, but I love, Paris. I love them both equally. And one of my favorite episodes actually is the one where they're all having boy trouble and they go to Stars Hollow and they get drunk on Miss Patty's punch.
I love that. And by the way, I'm a big proponent of, I think, solving get rid of that musical scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all
Paris, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Rory, Lane, meet up with Madeline and Louise. We're bopping around New York City and drinking.
Have a girls' night out, right?
And we still have it be, if you want to do like a musical montage with a song.
And, yeah.
Because that's very in her wheelhouse now. They're doing that often on Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Do that. Do it. But do it with these characters we love. But yeah. I do think there was some television stuff also of just like Paris is a character they fell in love with.
But here's the thing about that.
But I love Lane.
I feel like they set it up and it could have been, I would have totally bought it, that Lane and Paris have their own relationship, right? They like, I would buy Lane and Paris tricking Rory into lunch where they're like, this actually isn't just a girls' day. We're actually having an intervention because you need to get your shit together, right? Like, I could see like
You know, there were options and avenues.
I'm talking more in the original series that I think that they, in terms of just television real estate,
got
42 minutes. I think that if we're dropping into another character that's not a Gilmore, they fell in love with Liza Wile in terms of that performance.
Well, and I think when I watched the original show, it's really not till season 6 and 7 that Lane gets done dirty. I think up till 6, like, it makes sense, like, in terms of how much real estate she's getting.
She actually has a fairly good storyline in season 6. I think the getting engaged to Zach. No, whether or not you like Zach is one thing. I'm not a big Zach fan. Season 7 is the egregious error to have her have bad sex for the first time and get pregnant.
It's just mean. It's awful. It's mean. It's like, it's gross. And to your point, like, I like Zach. I don't love Zach and Lane together, but I like the character of Zach. But I think, I love that actor. And I feel for them as actors and as characters, because I think that there are so many episodes where he's just one note and he doesn't have to be. And that actor is like, capable of not doing that, but it's so clear that he was just sort of like directed in a very specific way.
I think he's actually pretty, you know, I mean, he gets some wacky stuff. Like, I like this kimono at my wedding or whatever.
I think he's so funny in that scene.
I just think that there are moments where they're like hugging and trying to kiss and it looks forced and awkward.
Right. And I think it's partly because they never really let Zach be anything but goofy.
Well, he also went from like philandering bro to like goofy doofus.
It was like all of a sudden they wanted him to be like Eric from Boy Meets World. And I was like, that's not what's
it's
happening.
Like this
here.
Character who's like falling in love with Lane and is with her is not the kind of guy you think would be like getting all these women because he's like a doofus.
It's weird. It was weird. Yeah. It was weird, but
justice for Lane always.
Lane. Anyway, I've said it already, but I want a reboot where it's just about the Kims. And all right, we have one final voice memo from dear friend of the show, Kate Vatter. Let's see, Kate, this will be our last.
My hot Gilmore Girls take is that I've never watched a full episode of the show and I have no interest in it. And I don't know why, because it's right up my alley.
Okay, so we're ending on, so I think our last voice memo from Kate is, I guess, if you got through this whole episode and you've never seen an episode of Gilmore Girls, why should...
I hope she didn't listen to all this. Because there's quite a few spoilers.
Yeah, there's quite a few spoilers. So for anyone that, for whatever reason, listened to this episode having never seen Gilmore, what would your pitch be to them to actually go back and watch now?
I think you should go back and watch Gilmore Girls because there are two individuals with busy lives who just spent 2 hours and 3 minutes talking about this show from 20 years ago.
It's true.
No, it's to me, it is a perfect comfort binge show in terms of the cotton candy of Stars Hollow that also has such reality and depth underneath of it. You'll laugh, you will cry if you're paying attention, and you'll also find small moments that reverberate throughout the series or that connect back to the very beginning in ways that I think are so beautiful in both the macro and micro level. It's a show that I think doesn't get the credit it deserves. It is incredibly smart and funny and dramatic and frustrating in the way that life can be. It's, to me, it's a perfect show, and it's the closest show that I think gets to reading a book.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, to your point about the fact that how long this episode is, but it's like, I love that it is a show that inspires such strong opinions. Like, honestly, we have so many more voice memos than I was able to share today, and there were so many people who sent in thoughts and ideas in our DMs. Like, we'll probably have to do a follow-up episode.
I mean, I have a whole podcast about Sex and the City, and I'll tell you what I could not talk about for as long is Big versus Aiden.
Yeah.
Could you get me going on my man Jess?
Oh, that's a thing.
All day.
I can't think of another show that has so many characters that have that create so many like strong opinions.
And let's be clear, we didn't even hit on some of the top. I mean, let's talk about Babette. Let's talk about Maury. Let's talk about Gypsy. Let's talk about Andrew. Caesar. oh, Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy, like, little moment.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Hunt is one of the bridesmaids that Logan slept with. And I was watching the episode, and when I saw Megan Hunt, I thought, this is the beginning of the end.
So well, and that's the thing too, like you said, like part of what makes this show so beloved is that it is so imperfect. Like you can argue about it because like they created characters that are flawed and they're not always good people and they don't always do good things. And like, and so we can sit here and debate, like so many people slid into our DMs with so many hot takes about the Life and Death Brigade, which was the secret society.
I mean, we've been talking for 2+ hours and I haven't even mentioned my favorite character, Emily Gilmore. The finest character of all time.
The greatest character of all time.
I'm kidding. That's Christina Yang. But
Emily Gilmore is
Emily Gilmore's top 10 for me in terms of fictional characters. She's a love of my life.
Well, to me, the anytime and a couple people slid into our DMs and we're coming for a year in the life. And the thing that I always say to them is, I go, to me, a year in the life, you will not hear me talk smack about it, because for me, it is the completion of Emily's incredible character arc. Like, forget Gilmore Girls plural. To me, it is Gilmore Girl. Like, where Emily starts and where she ends on the journey from the first episode to the final part of that is it's fascinating and incredible. And
beautiful. Like, when she walks out with that lantern and is sitting looking at the water, it's incredibly moving. The fact that this woman who, you know, has represented like wealth and aristocracy and coldness has found her maternal self finally and is not only taken in this family but is taking care of them and has repaired her relationship with Lorelai by understanding boundaries for herself and her daughter, to say, look, fuck Friday night dinners, we will see each other for 2 weeks at Christmas.
It's great.
That's what we can do. I need to have this home that I built and is for myself. And it's like truly stunningly beautiful, the wedding, Lorelai and Luke's, you know, wedding, to see that with Kirk when he gets the text that's from Lorelai that says it's perfect. I genuinely didn't even know people disliked A Year in the Life. That's how much I love it. To me, it is a perfect idea of why we reboot things.
Yes!
We also had an essential reason too, because of the devilry that is season 7 and David S. Rosenthal, who, much like Krista Vernoff, will be taken in front of the Supreme Court one day when I figure out how to sue people for creative decisions. I don't know that it's possible yet.
But it will be. It must be, because the harm that season has caused all of us, like,
it felt like trauma healing. I feel like a Gilmore Girls A Year in the Life is restorative justice. And I don't know if anyone agrees with that statement or if it even makes sense.
But it was like, and the things that I don't like about A Year in the Life are products of things they simply could not undo from damage done in season 7. And also, because season 7 is such a mess, they ignore the few good things that did happen because they just don't want to touch it. And it's hard.
Well, we'll argue about that in part 2 of this podcast, the good things in season 7, because I can't name nary one. There are some good ideas.
There's not good ideas. I don't think anything gets executed well. And I will say this, I will never forgive the writer's room of season 7, because if you are going to dare to get Christopher and Lorelai together, then they have to be endgame. And the bullshit that they did, kind of getting them together and then destroying that, was so gross. You can't have it both ways.
Sending them to Paris, but not even having the balls to just pay to send them to Paris. So they're still in Stars Hollow.
They're in Stars Hollow.
The Eiffel Tower behind them.
Absolutely batshit.
It looked like my high school production of An American in Paris.
It was embarrassing and rude. And listen, Chris is. We can sit here and argue about Chris all day, every day. But if she's gonna put, he's gonna, Yeah, literally. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore, because I'm just so amped up thinking about the fact that if you go down that path, you got to go down that path.
Or they needed to take it really seriously.
Yes.
And it felt like we were just biding time. There was no point in watching their relationship in season 7 that I actually thought, oh, she might not end up with Luke. It felt like, okay, we're just doing this to create artificial drama, which, that's one thing I will say about Gilmore Girls. It almost never, with the exception of season seven, feels like artificial drama.
Yep. Yep.
Every single thing to me, even by the way, Luke having a secret daughter from a woman we never met, to me makes it ties so much back to his relationship with Rachel.
Yeah.
This woman that popped in and it was like, who is she?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think
it just could have been Rachel. I don't know why they needed to create Anna Nardini.
Yeah.
Other than maybe that actress didn't want to come back.
This is the beautiful thing about Gilmore Girls. So to anyone who listened to this and hasn't watched, I think that's it. That's the reason Get into it, because these arguments and these conversations, there's no end in sight.
They're ongoing. If you don't think we're going to be arguing about Logan versus Jess, we haven't even gotten into, you know, honestly, we didn't even drop into being Team Christopher versus Luke, which I think we both are. Luckily, we agree, but the internet will fucking come for you every time I post about Christopher. I mean, people are passionate about this show, and I love the characters on Gilmore Girls. Like, I was going to say, like, I love people in my life, but I think I might love some of them
more. Yeah. Well, and this was always the show. Like, this was the show for me. I started watching it in high school. My mom watched it. When I went to college, it was the show that, like, as my life was changing, the one constant was that my mom and I were both still watching it, and I would call my mom and we would talk about it. And this was something that we could talk about even when we had nothing else that was a shared experience.
It's a great show to share with people. I'll be hosting a Gilmore Girls brunch soon.
You can
really get into stuff about this show. I mean, it's very moving. It's my favorite show of all time.
I love it too. And Chris, thank you so much for stepping in and substituting today. It has been such a delight to have you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
I'm sure we're going to have a lot of people that have beef with things, and there's like 100 more questions.
People are going to fucking come for me.
They're going to come. People, the way I get trolled about my love for Logan and my...
Actually, I think most people are going to be like, no, we agree with you, Chris. In this one case, this is not like on my podcast when I'm sticking up for Alexander Petrotsky. I think I'm on the right side of herstory here.
Yeah, I'm the one that's wrong. I understand.
No, not wrong. Everyone can have their opinions. Listen, it's just some opinions are wrong. It's a strange boundary.
I get it. Listen, I understand that Life and Death Brigade and Logan are gross ornamentations of class and white privilege, and I get why a lot of people
say you like that, and as I said earlier, you are a rampant capitalist. It's okay. The rest of us are just trying to break that system, you know.
I understand it's problematic, but I don't know. I have a lot more unlearning to do, a lot more therapy to go into. But
sometimes we can't take our therapy and our lessons to certain spaces. It's like, you gotta love Logan. That's for you, you know?
I will always be, something about my teenage self will just always be apologizing for Logan. And
it's kind of like if Joshua Jackson murdered someone, you know, you and I would be like, well, they had it coming. I don't look like,
in this house, I will defend him.
There's literally nothing I can do about that. There's
literally nothing. Well, Chris, everyone on this that listens to this podcast already loves you. But if they aren't already following the Shortcomings podcast, absolutely they should. But is there anything else coming up for you that people need to know about?
No, just Shortcomings. Every week on Wednesday, we are chatting through season 2 of Sex and the City. It's getting good. We're in the thick of it.
I've really been enjoying Shortcomings this season. Sometimes I forget you can't hear me and I talk back.
It's an unhinged podcast. Next week's episode is not well, so...
That seems to be the theme going around. Well, folks, if there was something we missed out on this episode, let us know. Do we need to do a second Gilmore Girls episode? Is there something else you want us to get into? Professor Bits of Guy will be back soon, and... until then, follow us on socials at WeStandSocial across all your social media platforms, and be on the lookout for some exciting announcements coming soon. Until later, stands. Bye.
Bye.